Hey everyone, and welcome to this special Soapbox edition of the Risky Business Podcast. My name's Patrick Gray. This Soapbox podcast series is a wholly sponsored podcast series we do here at Risky.biz, which means everyone you hear on it paid to participate. And this edition of Soapbox is brought to you by Capsule 8, which makes Linux security software. It's taken a long time, but over the last couple of years, we have seen a meaningful Linux security software market emerge, which makes sense considering the modern production environment is mostly glued together from various Linux systems. We are seeing some interesting approaches to the Linux security challenge emerge. Now, Capsule 8 makes detection and visibility software for Linux, threat detection, I guess you'd say, and you can use it to spot various types of funny behavior on your Linux systems. Brandon Edwards is Capsule 8's chief scientist, and he is our guest today. And really, we're going to speak about a few things. Primarily, this conversation centers on the fact that modern production environments have become so complex, it's almost impossible to comprehend exactly how they work. We've lost insight, and we've even lost the ability to understand, to truly understand, how individual security flaws can impact the wider production environment. So we're going to talk about complexity in modern production environments, and then we'll talk a bit about Capsule 8's approach to the Linux security challenge. Here's Brandon Edwards.
I think very few even understand any one component in the stack, let alone the stack in its entirety, and instead have like an abstract understanding of each component, and even more so an abstract understanding of the entire stack. And it almost becomes like this allegory of the cave, where we're really seeing things that sort of work empirically as we would anticipate, but they're not the real way that it operates. And so when there's something that changes one of them, or you know, if all these levels of nuance happen, vulnerabilities will appear in different ways and have different meanings. So for example, there's all these like HTTP desync vulnerabilities that are coming up in between how different components talk, or a loss of state between two components where the second order, third order, N order effects of that, depending on which slice of this ecosystem you've deployed, could be anything from like a CVSS like 3.0 where some information is disclosed to the whole thing is vulnerable. Like this happened in Kubernetes. It was like a 9.8 if you were running OpenShift. But otherwise, it was a 3.0. And the nuance between it was just because of OpenShift having some service configuration endpoint that became available that wasn't in the other configurations of Kubernetes. And I think the container ecosystem is just such a classic example of this, where they will all run into the same vulnerabilities ultimately at one time or another, not learn from each other, not really even share the information with each other, and each one is in contention with the other. So everything from you know, your orchestrators, is it Docker Swarm or is it Kubernetes? Is it Kubernetes running Docker? Is it Kubernetes running Cryo? Are you using Containerd? Are you using Run-C? Like, which of these are at the latest point? And even then, we see that people don't even fully understand how the things that they're building, like as the software authors, operate on each other. We have a vulnerability with Cryo right now that we just submitted that's being pushed out in a fix that has to do with the nuance of how the Linux kernel treats OOM killing combined with PIDs that wrap combined with C grouping, which ultimately results in Run-C accidentally scheduling something outside of a namespace. There's just so many pieces at play. It's no one has a full understanding on how it works.
You do see and hear about some of these environments that are just so complicated. There's that, as we record this, there's this image that has floated by in my Twitter feed multiple times in the last week, which is an image graphing the relationships between microservices at Monzo. And there's like 1,500 of them, and they've drawn a blue line to represent, you know, where connections are allowed between these microservices. And it's like, it is, it's a pretty busy graph. Let's just say that, right? So how did we make the leap between production environments generally involving a few components to involving like an incomprehensible number of components? And we didn't seem to have the middle part. You know, it just went from there to there without, you know, we went from A to Z without, while skipping a bunch of the letters in the alphabet. Or was I just napping when this change was occurring?
It's a great question. It's and when did we go from, you know, this idea of it's almost ironic, this idea of, well, we want to ship software easily, so we're going to make this sort of packaging system like containers, for example. But now there's so many different container engines that you've run into the same problem you had before that you were trying to solve of library issues and dependencies and everything, right?
So it didn't occur to me, but yeah, you're right. That's exactly.
That's the whole goal was originally that you could just, it works on your machine, you can bundle it up, it'll work on someone else's. And now there's so many different pieces with different operation that it's almost like we've come full circle on it.
Well, now it's about something else, right? Which is about deploying zillions of things, which isn't what it was supposed to be for.
Right.
It was supposed to be easier than virtualization for getting some sort of, you know, uniformity in the way things are deployed. And that's not what people are using it for now.
No, not at all. Not at all. And how they're managed and just the whole landscape is really incredible. But and then I think it goes even further with you look at any given JavaScript NPM package and its dependencies and the depth of that and how any one thing along the way could break. And I think it was just a couple years ago that there was some chain, somebody decided to pull down their server that was hosting a piece of it, and this whole lineage of NPM packages broke because this one piece that was pulled in the middle by all of them. And it was just that represents the sort of chaos that we're in. I don't think anyone even really fully grasps how deep it goes. And it's also funny coming from a world where we were moving so slowly, 15 years ago, and having to deal with this, the concept of, you know, like Windows backwards compatibility and all the sort of legacy stuff. And it made it really hard to move quickly. We've had no preparation for how to handle a world that can move so rapidly. And so it's now we're going to suffer the fallout of that, which is, I mean, comical in some regards, but terrifying in others. But that is a good question. How did we get here? How did it become so many moving pieces? I think it's levels of abstraction that have ultimately caused people to not know where things are. And that at any point that you have a level of abstraction, you have the opportunity for a security expectation or a bit of ignorance around security to exist. So, you know, if you want to take something in isolation that's like really easy, if you've got C programs that can have like integer overflows, and part of why those happen is that when people learn about integers, they don't really learn that it's bound by the ALU size of whatever and that it can wrap, it has this finite value set, it can't just have arbitrarily increasing values. And so in isolation, it's easy to say like, okay, that sort of abstraction is why people introduce integer overflows accidentally into their code, which resulted in exploitable conditions. But now when you look at the modern infrastructure, the modern stack that people are deploying, everything is meant to be a layer of abstraction to make it easy to scale. But the problem is that in doing so, you're also making the ability to be vulnerable something that scales as well. Press the button and turn it to 11.
Yeah.
So now your bad ideas are great bad ideas across all your cluster. I think that's part of it, is we are moving faster and with things that we understand less well. And so it's not just that you can make a mistake at scale. You can not even know what the mistakes are to be made and do them at scale.
I think one of the reasons, like usually when I speak to the people, like another sponsor of this show is Signal Sciences, right? And they've had some real success in their business because increasingly, you know, we're actually seeing online businesses do pretty well, right? And even traditional businesses pivoting into online, actually making money out of doing it for the first time, you know, for the first time, there's sort of a clear path. So it feels like there is a bit of a gold rush right now and people storming online because the returns are there, right? Like that might go some way to explaining it.
Interesting. In that these businesses otherwise did not have the same online business transactions before.
Yeah. And I mean, they gave me one example of a food chain that delivers, you know, they're like a delivery chain and it was always by phone. And then they introduced some app and then like their turnover went up, like they're a big company. Their turnover went up like across the company by like 15%, which was like the same amount of turnover that was going through the app. So it actually brought in new customers and they all made stacks of money out of it. It just feels like those sorts of stories are happening now.
Right. And as such, development is driving the business. I mean, software is eating the world. And so if development's driving your business, you're going to be part of this new software. Hipsterism, for lack of a better term, of making sure you can keep up and play in that arena to compete with presumably everyone else who's also doing that.
So how do we begin getting this genie back in the bottle? And, you know, let's talk a little bit more about what this genie looks like. Okay, so we know complexity is generally the enemy of security, But what sort of issues are we most commonly seeing? I mean, you spoke earlier just about, you know, a general sense of this stuff being needlessly complicated and a little bit dangerous. But let's talk specifics.
So from, like, if we want to start from the just the wide variation of these container engines, and I can move on beyond those, but that they all need to you know, have a container operates with some sense of security. And I also don't even know if that's a topic that we really want to assert people should have is a trust that a container is secure. But let's say you want to have some sense of isolation. There's an order of operations in which you need to start a process to ensure that it has its resources isolated and it's not going to interfere with others. But all of these engines are doing it in slightly different ways. And so there's nuance to how that isolation happens, and thus there's vulnerabilities around it. And the maintenance of these different engines is different based on volunteers or sponsored projects or organizations. And as such, you know, you can't make any assertion of something operating in an expected uniform way as far as it being isolated as a container. And so now you can't make any assertions on its security. But even if you zoom out from that, like take any sort of cloud services, they all have so many buttons, knobs, and dials, means by which you can accidentally misconfigure something or expose a piece of information. All of them are different. There's no sense of uniformity there. I think that's where a lot of where this genie lives. And then everything in between that, the cloud auto management of your Kubernetes clusters, the fact that different, let's say Linux distributions even, will have different restrictions on how these sorts of things run. So on Ubuntu, your containers are running, there's a default AppArmor policy and SecComp policy until you start using Kubernetes, which by default disables SecComp. And if you're on CentOS, it's SE Linux, but with a different set of rules because SE Linux mapping to AppArmor aren't exactly one-to-one. So the security properties that you might have expectations around just aren't even there. And we can't even, I guess the part that gets me is we can't even enumerate all the different places where we know there is desynchronization between expectation and the actual environment as it operates.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because it keeps coming back to this lack of uniformity, right? And I've seen that. I'm trying to think of a good parallel, but there are some things that I've thought of where, okay, that's not a problem in this environment, you know, this tiny little weird condition, but you go over to some other environment where there are some subtle differences and all of a sudden it is. So yeah, now, you know, you've really brought into focus what you were talking about earlier, which is, you know, the nuance can change things from being a CVSS 3.0 up to a 9.8, right? That makes sense to me now.
Right. So Kubernetes by itself, just in its raw deployment, that same vulnerability, and I don't know what the CV is offhand, but what was just information disclosure. And the vulnerability was really kind of dumb too. It was that you would have this SSL connection to a server, and it would have an SSL connection back to another web server. And also the whole game of these layered web servers.
I do remember this one. We spoke about it on the show. Yeah.
Yeah. And so in most environments, like even though the web session inside of that SSL tunnel died, it's like you couldn't do much more. Like you could send other requests, but they wouldn't give you much. But in OpenShift, you could start scheduling services. It would respond to other requests. And it's like, who would have even known that that was, you know, until the vulnerability came out, who would have even known that that was there? And was that, is that wrong? Like, is what they did like an obvious security mistake? I don't think so. But it's hard to know from, you know, architecturally what people should be doing because there is no uniformity in the decision making or like what's even being introduced as far as attack surface or things that you need to be concerned about where, you know, it's like this thing is safe as long as the following statements are true. And so you can at least spot check those statements, but there's none of that anywhere. I feel as though it's almost like, you know, when firewalls came out or whatever in the 90s and became popular of like, you have to cover up your ports. There was like this moment of awareness of like, okay, I've got these things. My computer's listening. You can talk to them. I should restrict that. We don't have any inventory of even what the things are that we should be restricting. I think with all the diversity of these different packages and software management, like, you know, all the way down to like even package management itself, like Snap versus apt and the fact that they actually have codependence, the things that are managed by your init system, like why is systemd so wildly like sprawling for what started as a replacement for like Upstart and System5 launch scripts,
Let's not get into the systemd conversation because we only have limited time.
Sorry.
That was a joke. But anyway, you just said about the firewall, that's really interesting, right? Because I, you know, there's this picture I draw for people, right? When explaining concepts around this, where, you know, you used to have different connections to different ports to get different types of information out of a system, right?
Right.
And, you know, you sort of had this breadth of access to a system via these different daemons, but the access was very shallow. And instead, what we've done is we run everything through AD and 443, but we just give insane depth and have just made those services, you know, the web services just extraordinarily complicated, and they do everything.
Yep. No, I think you're right. I get this visual analogy of a balloon, and it's Dino always says this, you know, you've got security as this part of the balloon that you can't grasp. So you like this attack surface, so you try and squeeze that down, but it just bursts up elsewhere, right? Like,
yeah, that's exactly.
You just move, yeah. And that's what we've done. We've just squeezed all the attack surface just over 443 and 80, but the complexity is still there. And I think it is greater complexity even. Because of all the different because of the different ways that you can do stuff.
Mm. Well, which leads us to this issue of uniformity, right? So, you know, I mean, say you're going to roll out a new Greenfields development, you know, a Greenfields production environment, which nobody ever really gets the luxury to do, right? Like, let's just be honest. It's everybody's preferred hypothetical, right? It's one that I like to use. It's Greenfields, right? You've been given, you know, basically unlimited cash to build this wonderful environment. Say you want a uniform environment, you know, and it's a project. Let's take healthcare.gov. Let's say that it's healthcare.gov is your new Greenfields project, because that actually was a Greenfields project. How would you actually roll out a project like that and get some level of uniformity? Because it's going to be big. It's going to be complex. Can you even do it if you start out trying to do it?
I don't think so. In fact, I think that's why the number one pain point for people is even just having a sense of visibility into what their systems are doing, because it's too complex to even really grasp how you would do it properly without being a complete Luddite. You know, like, how can you use any of the modern things that would be advantageous that give you great ratios of speed and scale while still having an understanding of what you're introducing as far as attack surface goes? I don't think you can do anything uniformly like that so much so easily, because I think it's the interdependency of all these things. I think everything is still so new as far as anything that gives you these excellent like economies of scale and speed. I don't think it can be done. I think it's the reason why visibility, just the ability to even have a sense of what your systems are doing, is why that is the number one ask for most of the world now, because they've understood that we can't have the simple, well, we know we need to block this port for these services, because it's just too complicated of interrelationships between them. I don't think you can get that sense of uniformity, and I don't think anyone's tried to define it really. And it's almost it's almost funny, because whenever someone sits and observes a problem like this and says, "Oh, there's too many different specifications for this. Let's specify a new thing to make it uniform," and really they're just adding another to the pile. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and herein lies the opportunity, right, for companies like Capsulate. What's Capsulate's approach to this idea? Because we've had people on from Capsulate, but it was quite a while ago. You know, what's the basic pitch?
I do think it's a visible. The pitch is around visibility and threat detection in modern environments, giving you a sense of what your system is doing or not doing, so that you can have some comfort that even though there's too much stuff to take inventory of what each component will do when talking to another, that you can at least say, well, I know these files shouldn't be touched, these programs shouldn't be run, or this should only be making these sorts of connections or accepting these sorts of connections. That, you know, for example, we shouldn't see any new programs descending from our web servers or being created by our web servers for that matter. I think that's really our approach, is like just giving people that basic sense of visibility and understanding of what's going on, and then also detecting common themes of exploitation.
Now, that's interesting that you said common themes of exploitation, right? Common themes, because we are talking about trying to solve a problem where there's a lack of uniformity and a lot of nuance. So how do you then go about adding, you know, or creating a software client that can actually detect threats in a meaningful way when the context on each individual host varies so much?
I think the complexity problem is more not understanding where a vulnerability can pop up. I think that the behaviors of the system that you know should not be happening still remain the same.
Yeah.
So maybe the path to
that behavior varies, but the behavior is the behavior, like seeing a whole bunch of new connections popping out of a box that never does that, right?
Yep. New processes that are doing crypto mining things, loading kernel modules, disabling security mechanisms. How they're getting that foothold, I think, is becoming harder to grasp because of the complexity. But once the foothold is there, or even successfully exploiting whatever vulnerability was introduced by that complexity, it still has to go through, you know, if you want to execute shellcode, you still need to allocate executable memory. If you want to, if you're wrapping around, you probably still have to move your stack pointer onto the heap. There's all sorts of stuff you still have to do for exploitation to succeed. I just think that we're blind. We don't have a view into all the places that we can be vulnerable, which makes it hard if you don't have visibility. So you have to have something. That's our approach.
And it does feel like this is stuff that you can at least attempt on Linux, whereas trying to do anything like this on Windows, it's just not going to work, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, also, I think that when you start talking desktops versus servers, right, because Linux ate the server market, well, no one was looking, but you can at least set some expectations of what servers should or shouldn't be doing, because you don't have end users running around on them or, you know, trying to install stuff randomly or any of the stuff that you have on the desktop. I think desktop is a nightmare to try and even have a sense of what you think you should or shouldn't be doing.
Yeah. Other people seem to be focusing more on the privilege and accounts thing, whereas you're really looking at doing exploitation detection, which I, as far as I know, makes you fairly unique in this market. Is that accurate, or have I just not been?
I think that's correct. And it's both exploitation from the exploitation and initial payload, and then access from there, like whatever people would do with their initial access. If that's lateral movement, if that's crypto mining, whatever the case is, things that stand out as being clearly wrong just in how they've come into existence.
Can you walk us through some of the successful deployments that you've done for your customers? Like, what did they look like? What were the problems you solved? Like, can you just give us a bit of a case study?
Yeah, absolutely. So, with one customer in particular, we have a bunch of sort of out of the box detections. We just say, just turn these on. Everything's very tunable. People can decide if they want to look for very specific things, but separate of that, we have stuff that we say, just look for turn on these default settings, and you'll catch stuff. One part of that almost always people come back to, and this one customer did as well immediately, was we detect debugging ptrace in production, because it can be as bad as someone is attaching to the SSH daemon and injecting some bonus code to harvest credentials. It can be as harmless as a developer it has shelled into a production machine and has GDB attached to something. But in either case, you want to know about it. And almost always when people deploy, so that's one of the first things they see, is they're like, developers are actually violating policy by debugging in production. But then the next thing is the ability to see when people have interactive sessions, like shells, into a machine even, which you shouldn't really be doing. You know, if you go by the ideals of immutable infrastructure and you have images or containers that you roll out and those run, there shouldn't be users on the machines to run new things or monitor or do other things. That should all be part of your automation. So if you do see an interactive shell, it's also either someone violating that policy, or worse, someone has exploited a service and is now doing their surprise remote administration on your boxes. And so those are things in this customer, that was the immediate value that they told us about. They're like, this is great, because we were able to see when someone's taking advantage of a vulnerability that might be in custom code. So it's not like we would have detected it with container scanning or anything, but we have a sense of when a behavior is bad, when you've told us about it, and it's a very high signal to noise ratio. I would say those two things, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff that we detect, but a lot of it.
But they're the showstoppers for new clients. But I imagine, you know, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but I imagine one of the challenges when you're rolling out something like Capsulate, it's going to be actually getting it everywhere, right? I'd imagine that can be the complicated or the hard part, right, is making sure that you've actually got it on every endpoint. I'm guessing you want it on every node. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Our current answer to that is that people have a means by which they roll out their software, that they roll us out to their nodes for whatever configuration management or deployment model you already have in place. That's certainly not a problem that we try and solve. I think trying to solve that problem can also be a problem of its own, in that you now become a security product that can deploy arbitrary code to things, and you become the target. I mean, ideally, if you have a containerized environment, it's easy, because you just ship us as a container once per node. But if you're running bare metal, you do have to install us like you would anything else on that host.
What sort of other visibility stuff are you doing with this? Is it just, you know, are you just looking for those anomalies, or are you monitoring, you know, basic system information as well? I mean,
A bunch of things that you would want policies around, usually for compliance of other stuff. So file modification, the ability to do stuff by users or groups of users, having awareness of what network services are listening, when they're listening, what brought them into existence, what is the lineage? I think that's a big thing that we provide people. It's not just this program ran, but it ran as this user, it was spawned by this program from this program all the way back up to, you know, systemd init. So that people can have a sense of you know, get some view into this complexity and understand how these things work.
Where did this process come from is a nice thing to be able to ask, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And yeah, what's its history? Why is it here? Even for just understanding what your current deployment is, because the amount of moving pieces, it can be hard to even have a baseline assessment of that. So at the very least, we give people that, but then also that makes it really easy to write policies around what should and shouldn't be creating new processes that should be becoming network services or spawning interactor shells or modifying files or from whence are they executing? Like, why are there things executing out of temp? Why are there things calling setuid coming out of user home directories? All sorts of things that can have security impact that you probably want to have visibility into and depending on them, probably also want to have a policy around.
Isn't there a chance, though, that like some of those things just have like the stupidest origins and they aren't, in fact, bad people doing bad things? They're just stupid people doing stupid things?
There certainly are, but wouldn't you want to know that anyway?
Yeah. No, I'm just sort of getting at that whole idea where you just see something alarming and it's just because, you know, someone's not very smart.
Yeah, well, and so that's the other thing too. We make sure that we're not in the case of like, if you turn on the event monitor on Windows, you can scare yourself very easily by not understanding why all these things are happening. We try to not do that. We try to at least enrich the data to a point where it's clear as to why these things, at least what they're doing at a high enough level to not have to be swimming in too much data. But then, yeah, of course, if someone is doing something silly, they shouldn't be, like debugging in production. I do think it should stand out at the very least from an audit log stance.
Yeah.
But yeah, there definitely are cases of that. And of course, there, you know, it can be easy to make the assumption that this one behavior should never happen in some place somewhere that is a legitimate behavior. So it's a fine line to walk, but I think that's also where a lot of our expertise comes through with the product to help separate those.
Now, I did an interview with Haroon Mir very recently where we were talking about one trend that we've seen in security lately that we really like, both of us, which is vendors have stopped trying to get everybody to use their consoles, right? Everything these days, like a lot of these detection tools, it's really like, here's our API, or here's a means by which we can just push alerts into your existing SIEM. Is that the road you've gone down with Capsulate?
Absolutely. People already have existing workflows for that. And just the management of data should be its own product anyway, and is. And people have already purchased that. And their other tools play nicely with it. It sort of goes into that Unix mantra of you know, be able to take input easily from other tools, be able to have output feed into other tools. I think that is the future of definitely security monitoring. I mean, any really event monitoring for that matter. This whole login to our own web app console thing.
It's kind of dead, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Brandon Edwards, thank you so much for joining us on Risky Business to have a bit of a chat about, I guess, the problem statement that you're trying to solve at Capsulate, talking about all of that complexity and just how... Yeah, it's a little bit wild these days in the average modern production environment. It's been a very interesting chat. I wish you the best of luck with it, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. It's been wonderful. Thanks.
That was Brandon Edwards, Chief Scientist of Capsule 8 there. Please visit capsule8.com for more information on its products. And that is it from me this week. I'll be back next week with more security news and analysis. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.